This time on Tell Somebody for 9/11/2014, FBI whistleblower Colleen Rowley gives a preview of her Kansas City All Souls Forum appearance this Sunday. Move to Amends David Cobb talks about what's next after Monday's Senate vote on an amendment to the Constitution to overturn Citizens United, Ray McGovern speaking in Moscow, and more. Stand by for Tell Somebody. Hello and welcome to the Tell Somebody podcast for September 11th, 2014. This podcast is produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the show broadcast on Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City. We're on the web at www.tellsomebody.us. Send me a tweet at Tell Somebody Now. Look for Tell Somebody Now on Facebook and like it. And remember, you can subscribe to the podcast for free at the iTunes Store. This is your host, Tom Clammer. If you have any comments or questions on the show, drop me a line at mail@tellsomebody.us. The podcast of last week's show with homelessness marathon director and anti-fracking activist Jeremy Alderson, just released from jail for protesting, a question for the Secretary of Energy, and more, has been posted. Look for links at www.tellsomebody.us. Everything changed on 9/11, the one 13 years ago. How many times have you heard that one? Everything changed on 9/11. Well, some things didn't change much at all. Media acting as stenographers to the powerful, bloodthirsty, profoundly stupid, and/or evil neocons itching for more war. No accountability for the lying politicians of shock and awe and the journalists who led the cheers. So why should they do different now? Here's a golden oldie from 12 years ago this week in the New York Times. U.S. says Hussein intensifies quest for A-bomb parts by Michael R. Gordon and Judith Miller. Published September 8, 2002. Washington, September 7th. More than a decade after Saddam Hussein agreed to give up weapons of mass destruction, Iraq has stepped up its quest for nuclear weapons and has embarked on a worldwide hunt for materials to make an atomic bomb, Bush administration officials said today. In the last 14 months, Iraq has sought to buy thousands of specially designed aluminum tubes, which American officials believe were intended as components of centrifuges to enrich uranium. American officials said several efforts to arrange the shipment of the aluminum tubes were blocked or intercepted, but declined to say, citing the sensitivity of the intelligence, where they came from or how they were stopped. The diameter, thickness, and other technical specifications of the aluminum tubes had persuaded American intelligence experts that they were meant for Iraq's nuclear program, officials said, and that the latest attempt to ship the material had taken place in recent months. Once again, that was from the New York Times, September 8, 2002. I would invite you to look at major media performance, including the New York Times, in coverage of such topics as Ukraine and Syria today, among others, and see if you think anything in media has changed for the better since 9/11. Former FBI whistleblower Colleen Rowley will be in town to speak at the All Souls Forum this Sunday, September 14th, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church at 4501 Walnut in Kansas City, Missouri. That's this Sunday at 10 a.m. at All Souls. Rowley is a former FBI special agent and chief division counsel in the Minneapolis FBI office who testified before Congress about the FBI's failure to help prevent the 9/11 attacks and, along with two corporate whistleblowers, was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year in 2002. She was also one of the four people who traveled to Moscow last fall to present the Sam Adams Award for Truth-Telling to Edward Snowden. Since 9/11, truth-tellers, most recently Edward Snowden, have risked their lives to disclose wrongful conduct. As George Orwell put it, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. How and why do social science-established groupthink and psychopathy align, especially during times of war, to suppress the truth? 9/11 whistleblower Colleen Rowley speaks on ethical decision-making and intelligence ethics, describing the biggest factors accounting for otherwise good people falling into this banality of evil. I recorded a conversation with Rowley a couple of days ago. Give a listen. Okay, Colleen Rowley, welcome back to Tell Somebody.
Thanks for having me.
So you will be speaking in Kansas City Sunday morning, September 14th at the All Souls Forum at All Souls Church in Kansas City, Missouri, talking a bit about telling truth in a time of universal deceit, to borrow from George Orwell. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a topic near and dear to my heart, as you can probably guess. In the FBI, I actually taught law to FBI agents and police officers, but also I was the ethics teacher for actually two different kinds of ethics. One was the Office of Government Ethics, about how government employees can't accept more than $20 in a gift, et cetera, et cetera. But the other one was called law enforcement ethics, and it was kind of a Sunday school for police officers that was instituted actually right before 9/11. And we gave the first PowerPoint to the FBI a week before 9/11. And I actually have a couple of the slides from that PowerPoint. It's one of my main motivations that stuck with me after, of course, it dawned on us afterwards that 9/11 could have been prevented. And so these two slides are part of my ethical decision-making talk. And it turns out that a lot of ethics people, I think, have a misunderstanding. They see everything kind of simplistic, good versus evil. But the truth is, good people, especially in hard ethical dilemmas, are challenged. It is challenging. This is kind of the Mark Twain notion that moral courage is rare while physical courage is relatively common. It's the same type of thought. But that even good people have a difficult time in these challenging times when the groupthink, when you're in an environment where the bosses and the leaders, but also peers, are all of a single mind. And it very much harkens back to Orwell's quote about, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And so my talk is very much about exploring and exposing some of these factors. There's some real interesting psychology developments, actually, that they've been able to see now with brain imaging and different things that actually dovetail very much with these old experiments, the old social psychology experiments that more or less established groupthink and how this works. So So I like to put a little science in with the ethics and try to explain to people why good people do bad things. Obviously, I had a 24-year career in the FBI, so I saw plenty of that, even otherwise good people doing wrongful acts. And of course, in our country right now, one of the reasons why this is so important is that if you follow, you know, War is a Crime, and there's a book entitled War is a Lie, you see that some of the worst possible actions, human actions that can possibly be taken, such as war and acts of terrorism, are almost always predicated upon lies. You know, everybody remembers Gulf of Tonkin and other things, but all wars, most wars at least, maybe not all, but almost all wars are started based on propaganda and lies. And so it's very, very important. Integrity is really important, and it's a lot more than loyalty, and it's a lot more than a lot of these other, you know, so-called virtues. So I think that it's something that audiences and people need to understand, and it's something that isn't well understood, I think. And you can see the evidence of that right now in our polls showing that 60% of the American public think torture works. I mean, all these things now that have come to pass, or even judges are saying we're living in an almost Orwellian world. So that's what I'll be talking about, and I hope to get a lot of people asking good questions and hard questions about it.
Okay, and, you know, most of us aren't in a position with the FBI at a time when there's an attack like 9/11. We're not in the Army as intelligence officers, but most of us can relate to this groupthink thing you mentioned, where you know something isn't quite right, but it's there's a strong current sort of flowing that's really is hard to go against.
Yeah, and in fact, people, you know, one of the explanations for whistleblowing, and this happened when three females, it was Enron, Vice President Sharon Watkins, and WorldCom auditor Cynthia Cooper, and myself, and we were all three females on the cover of Time magazine in 2002 as whistleblowers. It was probably the first and last time that a big media magazine or an important magazine like Time magazine actually honored whistleblowing, because it's now gone quite in the opposite direction since that time. But one of the questions we always got was, well, why are all three of you women? Do females have some kind of special virtue for truth or something like that? Really kind of silly questions like that. And, you know, it finally dawned on us. It took us a little while to figure this out. But the reason for that happening was because we were all below the ceiling, what they call the glass ceiling. And so I was way below the glass ceiling, but Sharon Watkins and Cynthia Cooper were just kind of just below it. And it turns out that if you want to see the truth, even if your own brain appreciates facts that are happening, you can't be in the group, because people who are actually in the group are really going to have a difficult time seeing the truth, that it's just that difficult. Whereas somebody just to the side of it, can actually have a much more objective viewpoint from what the people who are experiencing and acting in it.
Yeah. And I wonder if I could also get a quick comment on the idea that a lot of critics of people like Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden make much of the fact that they've made promises to keep secrets and to obey the chain of command, and which is true enough, but at least those in the military, as Snowden was briefly, and certainly Manning was, you take a sacred oath to defend the Constitution, not to defend the Army, not to defend your immediate superior. What supersedes what when you have a promise to keep secrets and you have this oath that you've taken?
Well, I think there's at least two aspects, different parts of the answer here. One is actually a slide on my PowerPoint. I have like this Venn diagram where I've diagrammed out conflicting loyalties and the highest loyalties. So Stella Bach, B-O-K, was a really renowned ethicist, and she says all ethics comes down to conflicting loyalties. And so, you know, you have to go with the highest loyalty. And your loyalty to a boss, for instance, which is fine, up to a point, your loyalty to, you know, even a spouse or a family member, et cetera, is great. Sort of virtue, it's good up to a point. But it can't be trumped by higher loyalties. And so, for instance, your secrecy oath, which, by the way, has no constitutional status whatsoever, they made this up afterwards, can't be trumped by your duty to uphold defend and honor and uphold the Constitution. The reason this is difficult, though, is because people think in terms of other people. And, you know, I'll mention this in my talk, too, but, you know, Monica Goodling, when she was being interrogated by a congressional committee, she says, well, my loyalty is to the president, you know, and she just blurted this out. And not even remembering that people in government would know your loyalty is not to the person. Your loyalty is to a principle or a concept, and that is the Constitution. Condi Rice actually ran afoul of this once when somebody was asking her, and she said, well, if the president orders it, it's not illegal. She basically remouthed the Nixon thing.
Right.
And so that's what mixes people up. Is they get into these situations, and certainly in the military where you're expected to follow your superior's orders, then you get into a me lie situation where your superior is giving you an order that you know is illegal. People in those situations have really difficult times of figuring out what is their highest loyalty and their integrity. So there's like a couple of aspects to this, but it makes for very, you know, you're absolutely right right now. This is the debate. I hope I get the chance to practice my skills because I'm going to be in a debate in another week about Snowden being a, you know, quote unquote, a patriot or a traitor, which is the same issue.
Yeah. Well, we will hear more about this on Sunday the 14th at All Souls. I wonder if I could switch gears just a minute. You're a member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And you were one of the signers, along with Ray McGovern and many others, to a letter warning Angela Merkel about, quote-unquote, intelligence on a Russian invasion of Ukraine. We just heard Professor Stephen Cohen on Democracy Now! A few days ago talking about how incredibly serious this is, and Ray McGovern has talked about it, too. This could lead to conceivably major war, this whole Ukraine situation, and it's been reduced in the media to a totally black hat Putin and a totally white hat U.S. and Europe. Can you talk a little bit about VIPS and how the group decided to send this letter to Merkel and why?
Well, you know, our tradition since 9/11, I wouldn't say since 9/11, but since shortly after 9/11, and especially in the ginning up of the so-called intelligence, which was non-intelligent pieces of data that they tried to then use to launch the war on Iraq. And so it became obvious that this was kind of all of a sudden after 9/11, it was kind of like the country became unhinged from reality in some ways. And and again, you're talking that same group think. A lot of good people went along with launching war on a country that had nothing to do with 9/11, that did not possess weapons of mass destruction. Well, our group, to its credit, I was still working in the FBI at the time, but when it formed, Ray McGovern formed it, they were one of the first and only groups to cast some doubt upon Colin Powell's presentation to the UN, which turned out to be completely false. I mean, we have such short memories now in the allegations that John Kerry made against Russia people should at least be skeptical, right? Shouldn't they be just a little skeptical based on the history that's gone on now in these past years? I'm actually more amazed that people about the same group think that I talk about all the time. But when it happens, I have to say, it still surprises me that people can't learn a little bit, even from this very recent history. But the VIPS group now has put out 30-some memos, and the latest ones have been to basically call for, okay, if the United States wants to make allegations that there's a Russian invasion into Ukraine, that the Malaysian flight was for sure shot down by Russian separatists, if they want to go out within hours and make these allegations, then the very least is they should not hide behind secrecy. Oh, our photographs are all top secret and et cetera. The black box, for instance, from the Malaysian flight, which has to have been listened to by now, and there's apparently now an agreement that it won't be released. Okay, so if you want to make these allegations and serious allegations that can lead to war and to even worse than war, it can lead to now, you know, mutual assured destruction because of nuclear weapons, then you had better have some ability to prove what you're saying. And that's all. Our group is, you know, there's lots of details and indications that these things aren't true. And so what we do in our memos is we try to at least make people think. And, you know, right now with the Ukraine, there's a ceasefire. It's at least held for a few hours. Some of us have our fingers and our toes crossed that this can go on, because if it doesn't, the 2,600 people that have died already could easily go up to the same as in Syria, where you're looking at 200,000 or nearly 200,000 people that have died, millions left homeless. And for what? Nothing. It's just, war is the dumbest thing in the world. And it doesn't win hearts and minds. It does not give human rights or democracy or all these things that our propaganda tells us that war brings. And, so our group, we did send it to Angela Merkel because we thought she might be the one in this whole group, NATO group, that's a little more cautious than some of the others, and certainly UK, Cameron, and whatever, the same as Blair. You know, they've been very, enablers of some of these wars. So we think Angela Merkel might have been a little more thinking. Who knows? People say, no, she isn't, and, you know, there's kind of discussion both ways. And like I say, all we can do is do our best. In this Orwellian world, nothing is easy, and we don't have cooperation of mainstream media. We have good people that, some of us are, got links now on social media, and we have groups. There are groups forming. There's historians, there's different kind of specialized groups. Social psychologists have group, and so there are groups forming, and I think that's what we have to work with in order to get the truth out as best as we can.
And I don't want to keep you on too long. I want people to come hear you in person Sunday the 14th at All Souls. But just real quick, I'd like your response to my observation that you have been involved in some very prominent things. Front page of Time magazine, testifying before Congress, running for Congress, one of the four who went to Moscow to meet with Edward Snowden, which got huge coverage. But you're not loath to be involved in other things that aren't such quote-unquote big deals, like rallies that maybe sometimes aren't that big and holding up signs. Just any thoughts about that on what people can do, even if they're not flying in high circles?
Well, that's exactly right. We had a One Peace vigil now that's on its 15th year, and you just go to a bridge, and, I actually have a little bit of an art background. I got A's in junior high in art, so I like to make posters. And, with motorists, if they go by, this is a way of circumventing the news and the media. And so they say, no, there are some people who agree with me. You know, they're holding the same signs. I agree with them, and I'm going to honk for them. When we had Honk for Peace, we ended up, the ACLU came to our defense because police were using some old law that had never been enforced about improper honking, and we ended up getting 4 stories on our major media just because of our Honk for Peace. It was our own little civil disobedience that turned out to be we were the ones legal and the police were doing the illegal. So there are things like this, and sometimes, you know, people, if you think creatively enough and you can think, and maybe things don't work. We have all kinds of rallies where very few people show up. But I think it's worth doing. Ann Wright, who is in our Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, has a piece on Op-Ed News today about the group that she's involved with called the Elders. And they just had a panel discussion in Hawaii. I would encourage people to Google this, Ann Wright's article on the Elders. Well, guess who are in the Elders? Desmond Tutu, former Prime Minister of Ireland, Mary Robinson, a lot of heads of state. I think even Kofi Annan, former head of the UN, is in it. And so these are really serious thinking people that actually have experienced things from a lot of, certainly from leadership standpoints, and they are coming together with the same type of motivation, which is that we need a world now that thinks before it, you know, wants to shoot each other and press buttons and put up missile silos, etc. And it's just it's really a very kind of not only inspiring, but it's a hopeful sign when you see people like of this stature that are coming together, and they're for people from all around the world. Jimmy Carter, he's the other one in there, former President Jimmy Carter. So anyways, this is what people should do. And people can do this in their own communities. They can organize. They can reach out. Don't get so, what's the word, in a group, don't get so focused on your own political party or whatever. You'd be surprised that there are people from across the spectrum now who agree on some of these major things. There's very few people who are, you know, supporting the corruption. There are very few people who are supporting war, actually. Most of the people are tired of war, even if they did initially support Bush's war. Now they're tired of it. So you'd be surprised if you start organizing, and certainly if you can get some people that have had some leadership experience in your thing, you have a chance. And certainly there's all kinds of ideas of what people can do. Sitting on the couch is not an option at this point. So maybe we can brainstorm a little bit on Sunday too, and maybe more people have other ideas about successful actions. So let's have people ask questions and let's see, you know, let's brainstorm about what can be done right now.
Okay, and I just mentioned that we have a group in Kansas City that I don't believe has missed a Tuesday every Tuesday since before Shock and Awe, well over 10 years, and I'm sure you'll meet at least a couple of those folks. But I think we'll leave it at that for now. Colleen Rowley, really looking forward to seeing you in Kansas City on September 14th.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it too.
Okay, thank you very much. FBI whistleblower Colleen Rowley. She'll be speaking at the All Souls Forum this Sunday at 10 a.m. at 4501 Walnut in Kansas City, Missouri, www.allsoulskc.org. Rowley mentioned the rush to judgment about responsibility for the shooting down of flight MH17 over Ukraine. We'll have just a little bit more about that, and you'll hear David Cobb talking about what's next after the Senate vote Monday on an amendment to overturn Citizens United. All that and more after you listen to this.
What if We had more hard-hitting journalism, more local stories, more quality kids' shows, more independent voices.
What if we had more people telling their friends about the vital information they hear on KKFI? What if we had more listeners supporting community radio in Kansas City and the surrounding area? Most of the nearly 2 million people our 100,000-watt transmitter can reach have never heard of us. What if more people helped us get more hard-hitting journalism and more local stories on the air on KKFI? What if more people realized the potential of KKFI and got involved in trying to reach that potential?
What if we had less celebrity fluff, less mind-numbing advertising, less partisan shouting, less junk TV? We need more public media, better public media, new public media, now.
Welcome back to Tell Somebody. This is Tom Clammer. Before the break, Colleen Rowley brought up the issue of the downing of Malaysian flight MH17 over Ukraine and the U.S. government's spin that Russia is surely responsible. The flight and voice data recorders were turned over to Britain, and we hadn't heard what was on them. After recording the conversation with Rowley, the Netherlands did release a preliminary report. More on that in a minute. But first, this from the Small World Department. According to my podcast host software, listeners in over 90 countries around the world have downloaded Tell Somebody shows. One listener from India, Srikant Ramdas, contacted me on Facebook a couple of weeks ago and said he particularly liked the shows with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern and that he was going to travel to Russia to hear McGovern speak. I told him if he got a chance to tell Ray that Clammer said hey. Well, a couple of weeks later, Ramdas sent me a message Monday saying he had done just that. In Moscow, after a stop in Berlin, McGovern was one of the speakers this past Monday at the World Russia Forum 2014, Russian Association of International Cooperation, and American University in Moscow present Advancing a Constructive Agenda for U.S.-Russia Relations. Srikant Ramdas recorded a short segment of McGovern's Monday talk in Moscow and posted it on his Facebook page. Give a listen.
The important thing and the analogy I was drawing was whoever lies first wins. Now, I can't say for sure that John Kerry was lying this time. But it was a repeat performance just 3 days after July 17 when the plane went down, when he got up on all five Sunday talk shows and said, with the Russians and Russia, this whole Russia, pro-Russian, separate partner, that was all the Russians, okay? And 95% of the American people, because they are so impoverished on real news, believe that to be the case. Now, what's really the case? I was going to say no one knows, but that's wrong. The United States government knows. The Russian government knows. Probably the Ukrainian government knows. There has been complete silence for the last 3 weeks about the evidence. Those fuzzy photographs, please, please, don't pay much attention to those. So what does it mean that there's been this silence? Well, it means that people are hiding things. Where are the conversations between control tower and the planes? What did the Ukrainians do with those things? Why is there a secret agreement between Ukraine, Malaysia, and Holland not to say anything to anybody? Where are those black boxes? The black boxes have been in London for, what, 3 or 4 weeks now? How long does it take to analyze what a black box says?
3 or 4 weeks.
3 or 4 weeks, all right. So, well, we should have some results. Now, why were they given to the British? Why did the Dutch give them to the British? Now, I will just prepare myself a brief remark from my heritage, which is Irish, and my Irish grandfather said, now, Raymond, do you know why the sun never sets on the British Empire? And I said, no, Grandpa, why? And he said, well, because the good Lord would never trust the British in the dark. So there are all kinds of unexplained reasons here. It's a scandal.
Ray McGovern speaking in Moscow earlier this week. Well, as I mentioned, the Dutch have released a preliminary report on the crash of Flight MH17 over Ukraine. Investigative journalist Robert Perry was on the August 14, 2014 edition of Tell Somebody talking about his August 8th article at consortiumnews.com titled, Was Putin Targeted for Mid-Air Assassination? The article discussed evidence that suggested Ukrainian extremists may have mistaken MH17 for Vladimir Putin's presidential plane and shot it down. You can listen to the podcast of that show if you missed it. It was in the second half of the show with Greg Palast. Go to www.tellsomebody.us and click on the title for August 14th, the tile with the picture of Greg Palast holding a teddy bear. On Tuesday, Robert Perry posted another article at www.consortiumnews.com, this one titled, Malaysia Airlines Whodunit Still a Mystery. Exclusive, more than 7 weeks after Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 crashed in eastern Ukraine, killing 298 people, a preliminary report failed to address the mystery of who shot the plane down. The Dutch investigators didn't even try to sort through conflicting allegations and evidence, writes Robert Perry. Perry has a link to the 34-page Dutch report in the body of his article, if you'd like to see it. And the report has a partial transcript of the flight voice recorder with the last talk from MH17 showing no indication of any problems, but the actual audio has not been released. The report has pictures of wreckage with irregular holes indicating shrapnel consistent with a missile strike, but does not include a picture that was on the web showing a portion of the cockpit, including the left side window, with what looked like round holes such as might come from machine gun fire from a fighter jet. The report draws no conclusions as to who might be responsible. Monday, September 8th, the U.S. Senate voted 79-18 to advance a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. A pretty impressive vote. Senators are now on record. But what does it really mean at this point? The amendment in question is one that the organization Move to Amend believes doesn't go far enough. It would allow regulation of campaign contributions, but would not overturn the concept of corporate personhood or the idea that money equals speech, the idea that corporations have all the rights if none of the responsibilities that citizens have under the Constitution. The amendment reads, Section 1. To advance democratic self-government and political equality and to protect the integrity of government and the electoral process, Congress and the states may regulate and set reasonable limits on the raising and spending of money by candidates and others to influence elections. Section 2, Congress and the states shall have power to implement and enforce this article by appropriate legislation, and may distinguish between natural persons and corporations or other artificial entities created by law, including by prohibiting such entities from spending money to influence elections. Section 3. Nothing in this article shall be construed to grant Congress or the states the power to abridge the freedom of the press. So now what? Move to amend spokesperson David Cobb talked about it with me. Give a listen. David Cobb, welcome back to Tell Somebody.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure to be on your program, and I also want to remind people that the only reason you get to hear conversations like this one is because you're listening to People's Radio, which is to say non-corporately filtered or sponsored radio, so we, the people, actually get a chance to talk to each other.
Well, thanks for that reminder, and amen, brother. So we're talking right now the day after the Senate voted on an amendment to the Constitution to overturn Citizens United. And, you know, my sense was that people were expecting a slim majority vote, but not enough to beat out the filibuster, and the vote was a lot bigger than what I expected. Given that the exact wording of this amendment, is this good news, or what happens next? And how does this all
work?
Well,
listen, Tom, let's cut to the chase. This is good news because it demonstrates that the growing movement to abolish corporate constitutional rights and get money out of politics is gaining steam. Now, we can go into the specific details of this, and I'm happy to do it, but I'm just here to tell you that out on the road, I'm on the road over half of my life on behalf of Move to Amend, people saw through the specific language that felt inspired and empowered to see that they're finally actually causing some movement in the halls of Congress. And I actually share that sensibility. In other words, we know that this is a movement in its early stages, that to actually pass a constitutional amendment, not just some flop, not just a vote for a talking point, that to actually amend the Constitution is going to take a mass movement that is broad, that is deep, that is conscious, educated, that is actually putting our shoulder to the wheel in every way. So we're in the early stages of this, but the fact that we've already forced Congress to begin to pay heed to us is a very good sign. Now, what was proposed was weak sauce, right? And we know it was weak sauce because all it would have done was to go back to the era when Congress had the authority to regulate elections. Well, big deal, right? That's not enough, and everybody that I talk to knows that it's not enough. But the fact that we've got some movement, let's recognize that it's movement. Momentum is building. Move to Amend is jumping on this as a way to roll out our Pledge to Amend campaign, where we are going to be going to candidates for office, whether they're incumbents or challengers, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents, whether they're members running for Congress or state legislature, county commissioner, city council, dog catcher. Tom, if anybody is running for office in this next election cycle, Move to Amend is going to put the question to them. Do you support a constitutional amendment to abolish all corporate constitutional rights and to abolish in its entirety the idea that money is speech? And we are then going to take that information and pass it along to our growing list to inform people when they go into the ballot box. You need to know where candidates who are seeking your vote, where they stand on the issue of corporate constitutional rights and money of speech. So, in essence, to answer your question, I think it was actually a good thing that we saw this level of movement. And Move to Amend has a plan to actually continue to build on that momentum. But let's just be honest. Everybody that voted in the Senate knew darn good and well that that was not going to, that Bonner is not going to even let this come up for a debate, much less a vote, in the House in this session. And everybody knew it. It was so, on the one hand, it was a shameless ploy for talking points. On another way of looking at it, we force them to begin talking about an issue even though virtually all of the Senate are millionaires who are already being funded by the same basic Wall Street bankers and investment financiers and so forth. So, you know, it depends on is it glass half empty or half full, but the need to build a movement continues.
Okay, and explain to me what's next in terms of, I keep hearing that there's going to be another vote in the Senate possibly in the next day or two or three. What would that vote mean? And then if, even if something happened in the Senate, as you suggested, it won't be allowed to come up in the House probably. How far?
Well, yeah, Tom, my understanding is that the lopsided vote was nothing more than a vote for cloture, which basically means to cut off debate. Now what will happen is the actual formal vote on the resolution, which I expect to be actually along straight party lines, but maybe not. But at the end of the day, I don't think that there's anything really to celebrate in that particular vote. There is something to celebrate in the fact that we're seeing movement in Congress.
Okay, and you have talked about wanting to get the right amendment in place at some point because I think, as you put it, we'll have just one bite at this apple. We're not
That's
at
right.
that point
Tom,
yet,
I'm
right?
I'm happy to tell you that the We the People amendment proposed by Move to Mend has, in fact, already been introduced in Congress. It's introduced in the House already. And we, frankly, have not spent a lot of time lobbying because we've been spending our time educating ordinary people and building a mass movement. And as listeners of this program well know, I mean, thanks to the local Move to Amend crew in Kansas City and Matt Upps, Mary Lindsay and her entire crew there, we had a standing room only crowd at the university who understood very clearly that just getting money out of elections isn't enough. Because remember, Tom, if a corporation can claim constitutional rights, it means that the corporate lawyer can argue to overturn environmental protection laws, worker safety laws, public health laws, and any public policy that we work our butts off to get passed can be overturned on the basis of corporate constitutional rights. So all I'm getting at is there is what we believe to be the gold standard proposed amendment is already in Congress. Now, in the next session, which is going to just be coming up in a matter of months after this November election, the next session will be in order, and all of the various amendment proposals must be reintroduced. So the question is going to be, at the end of the day, are we actually just taking our marching orders from the fat cats who run the Democratic Party, or are we actually going to build a mass movement that's telling the members of Congress, regardless of what their party, what party they are in, what they should be doing to represent us? It's all a question of whether we're building independent political motion or not.
I've had spokespersons from Public Citizen on my show a couple of times, starting even before the Citizens United decision was handed down. And groups like Common Cause and Public Citizen, I really respect and admire their work, but wonder if the amendment that they're supporting isn't strong enough. Both of these groups represent large amounts of people, and Craig Holman with Public Citizen, if I took him right, seemed to be like they wouldn't be adamant that the wording of the amendment be as they have it. They might be open to having it as Move to Amend has it. Do you see any hope of uniting forces with these groups that represent a lot
absolutely.
Of people?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, Tom, I mean, the reality is this, that we are in the early stages, and honestly, we're in a struggle to define what the real struggle is, right? And we had moved to amend or clear that corporate constitutional rights and money is speech is what the real struggle is. People who believe that we just need to get money out of elections, I think that they're correct that we need to get money out of elections, but if that's all we do, we haven't gone far enough. So I'm perfectly prepared to work with people who are ready to work on what, like, a real democracy movement. And I'll tell you, Tom, like, everywhere I go, people are saying corporations are not people, money is not speech. That's the demand that the movement is making, and I say this with respect, but I will say clearly, the nonprofit industrial complex based in D.C. That is so focused on just lobbying Congress have lost sight of where the real movement is. The real movement in this country, and I know because I travel this country one half to two-thirds of my life. I mean, I'm in Indiana right now. I've been in Ohio and Kentucky for the past 2 weeks. This movement is growing, and this movement is getting broader and deeper every day, and it is not merely about money and elections. It's about corporate power. It's about the corporate control of our government. Move to amend is actually not only representing such people, but we're educating, agitating, and organizing with such people. You know, Tom, I want to remind you and your listeners, Move to Amend did not even exist before 2010. We were 12 people in the living room. Today, we're 367,000 people and growing. We've helped 600 communities pass resolutions of support. That's city councilor and county commissioners voting. Even better, we put it on the ballot 200 times to let ordinary voters vote on whether they think corporations should have constitutional rights and money as speech, whether they support a constitutional amendment to abolish those doctrines. Tom, we've been on the ballot 200 times. You know how many times we've won?
200, wasn't it?
200, right?
All right.
We haven't lost yet, and that includes liberal places. It includes conservative places. It includes literally every place that we've been. And I want to nail this. Boston, San Francisco, Madison, you know, the progressive communities you'd expect. You know where else we've won? Waukesha, Wisconsin, Republican Scott Walker, hometown where they haven't voted for a Democrat for Congress or president in the last 50 years. And Waukesha moved to amend was on the ballot in the last spring election, and we won. We won in Salt Lake City, Utah. We've won in Montana, right? I'm talking about 75% of the voters in a statewide ballot in Montana voted in favor of abolishing corporate constitutional rights and money as speech. It wasn't just money in elections. It was corporate constitutional rights on the ballot. And that's part of the reason it won. We will continue to win, and this is why I'm going to circle back. We'll work with everybody, and I genuinely and sincerely believe that where this movement will come united is corporations are not people with constitutional rights. Money is not speech.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, read your versions of the amendment that you come across and see if those concepts are covered that way. David
Cobb. And also, Tom, please do have your listeners go to the website movetoamend.org and learn a little bit more on their own.
Okay, movetoamend.org, and you can link to the Kansas City version of that. I'll get that up. David Cobb, any quick final words, and then we'll let you go.
The same way I started, folks, you heard this conversation because it's non-corporately sponsored, non-corporately filtered information. Remember that during Pledge Drive. We need this radio program on the air.
Thank you very much, David Cobb, and good luck on your barnstorming tour.
Thanks, Tom. Bye now.
On Saturday, September 13th, there will be a benefit for KC Move to Amend, the local chapter of the national organization looking to amend the U.S. Constitution to overturn the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission Supreme Court decision. Groove to Amend will take place 2 to 8 p.m. Saturday, September 13th at the Record Bar, 1020 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, keep an eye on www.kcmovetoamend.org.
This is Climate Connections. When America's water systems were built in the early 20th century, they were designed, like many systems around the world, with the assumption that there would always be an unlimited supply of water. But in some places, the water supply is drying up.
Right now, in both the developed world and the developing world, we are not thinking about how the water resources that underlay our economy need to be managed in a more flexible and more robust way.
That's John Matthews, co-chair of the Alliance for Global Water Adaptation. He says that now, in the era of climate change, we need to start rethinking the way we manage our scarce water resources.
There's a lot that we can do that's very practical and very tangible in order to secure our water supply and sanitation future, our agricultural future, and that there are real practical solutions that we can implement right now.
The new approach mimics nature by creating systems where drinking, storm, and wastewater are treated as one interconnected water cycle. This type of closed-loop system recycles the water, uses less energy, and gets more out of every drop. I'm Anthony Lazarus. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to the podcast edition of Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us. Comments or questions, send an email to mail@tellsomebody.us. You can also follow me on Twitter @TellSomebodyNow. The Tell Somebody podcast is produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the broadcast of Tell Somebody heard on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City, streaming around the world at www.kkfi.org. I'll be on 90.1 FM KKFI every Thursday morning at 9, right after Democracy Now! If you haven't heard Tell Somebody before, I hope you'll listen again. Check out the podcast and the broadcast. Click on a tile at www.tellsomebody.us for a link to a past show. If you enjoyed the show and appreciated the information you got from it, please tell somebody about the podcast and the broadcast. Spread the word to your friends and contacts by word of mouth or Facebook or Twitter or email list or any other way you can think of. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you next Thursday at 9 a.m. on Tell Somebody or anytime you like at www.tellsomebody.us.